For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
So let's welcome Tygon Dan Lightning.
Thank you, Stephen and Shotai, for arranging this wonderful gathering and opportunity. When Stephen first talked about my talking here, we talked about Eihikoroku or Dogen's extensive record as a topic, and I'm not going to talk about that, but I want to say a little bit. I want to talk about, instead about an essay in Shobo Genzo, but I'll just say, it's already been mentioned, so I don't need to say so much, but Dogen's extensive record is the other major massive work of Dogen's besides Shobo Genzo, and Stephen was talking about, other people were talking about Dogen's sense of humor, even though the little Jodo or Dharma Hall discourses in Eihikoroku, most of what Eihikoroku is, are very formal. In some ways, you get to see Dogen's personality and his sense of humor and his warmth and his own teaching style more. These were very short, really very, very short talks given to the monks. So anyway, it was a privilege to work with Shabaku Okumura on that, and I'm glad it's out there now. And maybe I'll say a little more about it or give some excerpts from it in the roundtable. But what I want to talk about now is one of the essays in Shobo Genzo that I think is quite revealing about Dogen's approach to practice. And but it has not gotten as much attention as I think it deserves. Of course, there are many, you know, there are in the largest version, 95 essays, sometimes considered part of Shobo Genzo. Anyway, I want to talk about Gyobutsu Igi, is the Japanese name. This is a Shobo Genzo essay that I translated with Kaz Tanahashi. And it's in his complete Shobo Genzo analysis, originally in his little book Beyond Thinking. And we translated the title, Gyobutsu Igi, as the awesome presence of active Buddhas. But I want to talk about the title a little bit and talk about some of the basic teachings in there. It's a long essay, and I'm not going to get to all of it. But I think it has a lot, it reveals a lot about Dogen's approach and attitude towards practice. So first of all, Gyobutsu. Could be translated as active Buddhas or practicing Buddhas. It's the gyo from shugyo, which means to practice. And it also has some relationship to the Lotus Sutra story that Griff mentioned about the Buddha, because the bodhisattvas who came from under the ground and inspired Buddha's revelation in his long lifespan the leaders all had names that involved gyo, or conduct, or active. Anyway, Dogen, in the beginning of the essay, talks about how these gyobutsu, or active Buddhas, practicing Buddhas, maybe we can say actual Buddhas, are not one of the other categories of Buddhas. They're not one of the three bodies of Buddha. They're not Buddhas who acquire enlightenment. They're not Buddhas who have innate enlightenment. And he goes on to different kinds of Buddhas. He says they're actual active practicing Buddhas. And he ends up saying at some point that all Buddhas are actually active practicing Buddhas. So this is talking, this essay is talking about Buddhas not as some theoretical cosmic being, but as what is the actuality of Buddhas. And then the other part of the title, Igi, we translated it as awesome presence, and Kaz sometimes translates things a little flamboyantly, which I appreciate a lot. And Igi does mean awesome presence, but more commonly it would be translated as dignified manner. It has to do with the kind of dignity and presence and the inner dignity of these active Buddhas. And actually, there's a story about, I think Tetsu Gikai was mentioned earlier, one of Dogen's, was referred to, one of Dogen's disciples who was told that wasn't ready to receive transmission because he didn't have enough grandmotherly mind. Later on, he told his teacher, Koen Ejo, who had also studied with Dogen, that finally he accepted what Dogen had said, that dignified manner is the Buddha nature, is the Buddha Dharma. Now, for Westerners who maybe think of monastic regulations and so forth as restrictions and rules and, you know, very maybe very anal or something, that to see this dignified presence as the actuality of these active Buddhas is part of the point of this title. So there's this upright awareness and expression of active Buddhas. So I'm going to refer to the chapter in my new book, Same Questions, that where I talk about this essay. One of the first things that Dogen says in this essay is, know that Buddhas in the Buddha way do not wait for awakening. So again, this is not about, awakening is not something that will happen eventually later on if you do enough practice or if you have enough faith, or, you know, Buddhas don't wait for awakening. It's not, so for Dogen, this Zazen, the Shikantaza, is not some method to reach some altered state in the future, or to, or some technique to get to somewhere else. So this points to, as I see it, the expressive side of what Buddhas are and what Buddhas do. But they don't wait for awakening. They express this awakening right now. Of course, there is, as I think Griff was saying, there is awakening and those who aren't awakened, but the point isn't that you get some awakening in the future. And then there's this sentence right after that that is maybe one of my favorite sentences in all of Dogen, and there are other famous sentences like to study the way is to study the self in Genjo Koan, but this one is right up there for me. He says, active Buddhas alone, or you could translate it as active Buddhas simply, fully experience the vital process on the path of going beyond Buddha. So this is a kind of meaty statement that I recommended to my students to memorize and chew on. To fully experience the vital process on the path of going beyond Buddha. Again, it's not about reaching some state of mind or state of being called Buddha. It's about this vital process. It points to a kind of organic, a chemical, vital process that is happening in the process of Zazen and life based on Zazen. We sit in the cauldron of the forms and structures and guideposts of the Buddhas and ancestors going back 2,500 years, and actually much more, but just surrendering to this organic path, allowing the dynamic active Buddha to take form, is this vital process. So that it points to this quality of Zazen that's not yet, he says elsewhere in Fukan Zazengi, it's not learning meditation, it's not some meditation technique, although practically speaking, in the context of doing this practice, studying and learning and taking on some of the old Buddhist meditation technology may be helpful in settling, but the point isn't to master some spiritual exercise. It's to give yourself to this vital process and to the path. And what is it the path of? It's the path of going beyond Buddha. So when we're translating Heikoroku, one of the phrases that Dogen uses very often, much more than Shikantaza, I think, is going beyond and going beyond Buddha. So this is a little bit like Linji Rinzai saying, if you meet the Buddha, kill the Buddha. Well, a little gentler way of saying it. Going beyond Buddha is a common phrase in Dogen's writings indicating the ongoing nature of awakening and of the active or practicing Buddha's conduct. For Dogen, Buddhahood is not some one-time attainment to be cherished thereafter, but an ongoing vital process requiring continued reawakening. The historical Shakyamuni Buddha and all the other many Buddhas do not stop practicing and they do not stop awakening. The only real Buddha is a Buddha going beyond Buddha, this ongoing sustainable renewal resource of Buddha. So this idea of going beyond Buddha, if someone has some deep experience of Buddha, whatever that means, if someone has some good understanding, it's possible to have understandings of all of this. As Griff was saying, koans are not nonsense. There's a logic of awakening that they express. But what Dogen is saying here is to find this vital process on the path of going beyond Buddha, of not sticking to, you know, if you have some experience or understanding of Buddha, it's not enough to make a picture of it, put it up on the wall, and bow down to it. How do you continually, ongoingly reawaken? So I would say the Buddha had his great awakening experience, and yet he continued for, you know, four decades afterwards teaching and awakening. So this going beyond Buddha, I could almost see going beyond as a kind of definition of Buddha. Buddha is the one who is going beyond. This is this flavor that this particular essay really points to, of this kind of active, lively, dynamic practice of actual Buddhas that's not caught in one particular understanding or experience of what Buddha is. That in each new situation, there is the possibility of awakening, there is the path, there is this vital, I would say, alchemical process that Dogen Zazen is about. What is this going beyond Buddha? What does it mean to fully experience the vital process on the path of going beyond Buddha? Dogen, you know, you might translate that and push together vital process and path, but really he uses all these words to kind of get at the texture of something. And soon after that he says in this essay, because active Buddhas manifest awesome presence in every situation, they bring forth awesome presence with their body. It's not something theoretical. Thus their transformative function, he continues, flows out in their speech, reaching throughout time, space, Buddhas, and activities. So there is a transformative function that he's talking about. In the Suki Roshi lineage that I was trained in, we sometimes talk about, Suki Roshi talked about non-gaining attitude, and some people think that means you're not supposed to get anything, and that's bad if that happens, or that there's no, that Zazen practice is meaningless or doesn't have any real purpose, and clearly that's not what Dogen's talking about. There is a transformative function, it's not something based on our ideas of what enlightenment is or ideas of what spiritual reality is. It's deeper than that. We do not try to get something specific from this practice, because if we have some outcome we want to get, that's just consumer zen, just trying to acquire some goodies. But our practice is not meaningless or purposeless. So there is this, there is a transformation that happens through doing this practice. I've seen it, you know, in my life and in many people I've practiced with, that doing this Zazen practice that Dogen recommends, this practice of just sitting or sitting upright, this dignified manner. I may have hit something on the snap something. Looking at the bus. But, there is something that happens by taking on the practice of just being willing to fully experience this vital process. Something happens. There is some transformation. I would say, as a basic Buddhist principle, awareness itself is transformative. That when we pay attention to something, it changes what it is. When we pay attention to our own life and our own habits, and, you know, yogically, physically, study the self, as Dogen says, experience the realities of our own life and our own awareness and our own patterns of greed, hate, and delusion. That awareness changes it. This isn't just Buddhism. This is modern physics, where they've discovered that if you observe a phenomenon, it changes the phenomenon, even on the subatomic level. So this awareness is transformative, and I think that's what Dogen is talking about. Again, this is a lot in this essay. I want to go to a few other parts. He has a teaching about letting go. So the excerpt from Gyobutsu Igi, he says, this is to abandon your body for Dharma, to abandon Dharma for your body. This is to give up holding back your life and to hold on fully to your life. The awesome presence or dignified manner not only lets go of Dharma for the sake of Dharma, but also lets go of Dharma for the sake of mind. And then he says, do not forget that this letting go is immeasurable. So this idea of letting go, connecting up with not holding, with giving up, holding back from your life, I think is very, well, it's in some ways it's stern in the way Dogen can be, and in some ways it's very comforting, I think. But this letting go, in Fukan Sazengi, he says not thinking or beyond thinking is the essential art of Zazen. I would say that letting go is the essential art of Zazen. Here he says letting go is immeasurable. And letting go is subtle. It's not getting rid of. So thoughts and feelings arise naturally as you're sitting upright or walking or in your life. It's not about getting rid of thoughts. But letting go, and then in the next moment they may come again. But this art of letting go is a kind of craft of Zazen, and something that Dogen is encouraging here. I would say this is letting go of holding back from your life. We have so many reasons and encouragements to hold back, to get distracted by all the sophisticated entertainments that our culture provides, to retreat from living our life. Dogen says, give up holding back your life so as to hold on fully to your life. So the sense of holding back from this awesome presence, which is available. There is this presence and this vital process that we can get a taste of when we are willing to take on this practice. Dogen says about this, letting go a little further, who would regard this apparition of blossoms from the sky, which is a quote, again, another reference, maybe it should be in quotes, but there's a whole essay called Blossoms from the Sky. But who would regard this apparition of blossoms from the sky as taking up a mistake and settling in with a mistake? Stepping forward misses, stepping backward misses, taking one step misses, taking two steps misses. So there are mistakes upon mistakes, Dogen says. This is not about this fully experiencing the vital process. It's not about getting it right. What Dogen's practice is not something that one needs to learn to do perfectly or impeccably. That's not what he's talking about. It's simply a mistake upon mistake. We're actually alive in this vital process. So to give yourself, to not hold back, to let go of all the things that get in the way of our being willing to be the person we are, upright, engaged in a vital process on a path of going beyond Buddha, of not being caught by any idea we have of Buddha. So what is Buddha? There's innumerable answers to that in the koan literature, but to not hold back and to let go from mistakes, from Griff was talking about also in terms of koans, anything you say is a mistake, but not saying anything is also a mistake. How do you take on this kind of active process? That's what Dogen is talking about here. He goes on to say, totally encompassed by Buddhas, active Buddhas are free from obstruction as they penetrate the vital path of being splattered by mud and soaked in water. So maybe that means going into the swamp here, maybe everybody. Anyway, being splattered by mud and soaked in water.
It's a koan quote.
Aha. Where's it from?
I forget. I have it on my computer. But if you don't know where it's from and you don't know the context, it's hard to make sense of it there.
Okay.
It might be this one might be from the Lotus Sutra.
I think there's something, yeah. I think there's a phrase in the Blue Cliff Record, which may also go back to the Lotus
Sutra. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway,
but yeah, that's
but
part
it's
of
another one of these things where,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. So and yet, even not knowing what the context of the original use of the quote was, it's rich,
yeah.
I would say. And part of what it's pointing to is that this practice is not something that happens in some beautiful, ethereal, heavenly mountaintop realm. We have that idea that Buddha's, you know, up on some mountain somewhere. Right in the middle of the mud and water, we practice dignified presence and engage the transformative function. So in terms of bringing Dogen down to earth, where you are in the mistakes you're involved in this week, that's where it happens. It's not about it's being splattered by mud and soaked in water. Maybe just a couple of other of these sections I'll mention, and then we could have some discussion. We've been talking somewhat about understanding and knowledge and what is knowing and what is faith. There's a phrase in later in this essay where Dogen says, thoroughly practicing, thoroughly clarifying, it is not forced. It is just like recognizing the shadow of deluded thought and turning the light to shine within. That's also a reference to a basic meditation instruction, to turn the light to shine within. Then he says, the clarity of clarity beyond clarity prevails in the activity of Buddhas. This is totally surrendering to practice. So this phrase, the clarity of clarity beyond clarity. Clarity here has something to do with faith. It's a character myo. It could be translated as understanding. It also could be translated as brightness. So it's the brilliance of your brilliance beyond brilliance, the understanding that goes beyond anything we can understand. So right now in this room, many things are happening. And we can't possibly see or understand all of them. The complexity of any situation is beyond our human intellectual capacities. That doesn't mean we shouldn't try to understand or use our intellectual capacities, but just to know that the clarity of clarity beyond clarity prevails in the activity of Buddhas. How do we know anything? And this also relates to faith. How do we trust? Rather than the English word faith, I would use the word trust. How do we trust the next breath? How do we trust the next step? How do we trust the next mistake? All of these are to be implied in what Dogen is saying, this understanding beyond understanding. So this is not just some ancient Eastern inscrutable mystical philosophy. As I was saying, according to modern physics and string theory, there are dimensions of reality happening all around us of which we are not aware. How do we know? Well, I can reach in my pocket and I can feel the difference between the coins and the pens without looking at them. I can see that with my fingers. How do we know what it is, whatever it is we know? So I think this vital process on the path of going beyond Buddha is about knowing things in ways beyond how we usually think we think about knowing things. So there's one place where he says something about he says, yeah, to understand the principle of total surrendering, you should thoroughly investigate mind. In the steadfastness of thorough investigation, all phenomena are the unadorned clarity of mind. And there's I think it may be a different essay where he talks about clarity and control. Maybe it's in Shilogetsu Henzan where he talks about we don't even control whether or not we control things. So nothing ever happens that we're totally in control of. That doesn't mean we can't actually engage it and express it. But nothing ever happens according to our expectations or ideas of some outcome. This is not the event that I could have imagined, because it's the actual event with a particular with each one of you in the room now. So again, this clarity of clarity beyond clarity, I think, is an interesting notion to chew on. The last piece of what he says in this, there are many other sections of this, I'll talk about another section where he talks about, you know and understand that the three realms of desire, form, and formlessness, a standard Buddhist construct, the three worlds, are merely elaborate divisions of mind. Although your knowing and understanding are part of all phenomena, so it's okay if you have some knowledge or understanding, although your knowing and understanding are part of all phenomena, you actualize the home village of the self. And that's a phrase that I really like. It's not that you should get rid of your understanding, intellectual knowledge, but what is this home village of the self? Where is that? What is this home village of the self? It's not about our small ego self. Of course, it's not separate from that. All phenomena are the unadorned clarity of mind, he says. To let go beyond letting go and actualize the home village of the self is simply another way of saying to take refuge in Buddha. So maybe we could understand what he's saying in this essay about the awesome presence of active Buddhas as to turn towards this possibility of Buddha, whatever that is. And then, how do we find the home village of the self? That reminded me, and I don't know that the home village of the self is a phrase from another koan, but it might be, but there is a phrase from Blue Cliff Record, case 61. That's a story, that the main case, the teacher asks, are there any patchwork monks who can live together and die together? And in the commentary, Yuanwu says, he has his own mountain spirit realm. And I just, again, finding these phrases that resonate, that help us sink into this vital process, is part of, part of the joy of reading Dogen. It's not, you know, you don't read Dogen to try and figure out and understand it, but there are phrases like this. And this was from the Blue Cliff Record, but he has his own mountain spirit realm. Or, in Chicago I say she has her own fairy spirit realm, or lake spirit realm. Here you have your own Everglades spirit realm, but where is this home village of the self? So part of this process, this vital process on the path of going beyond Buddha, is this coming home, returning home to Buddha. Taking refuge is an interest. The idea of taking refuge is very interesting. Partly it implies refuge as in sanctuary, but it's also like a fugue, returning back to a starting point. To paraphrase T.S. Eliot. So for Dogen, Buddha is not something on some exotic being on some exotic realm, but something that, you know, we don't wait for Buddhas to, we don't wait for awakening. Buddhas don't wait for awakening. Awakening is something that is available here. That's, I feel that very strongly as one of Dogen's messages, so to speak. And again, there's so much more in the original Gyobo Tsuiki essay. I'll just close with one more little section that he talks about. He talks about everyday activities. So how do we experience this awesome presence of active Buddhas? Again, if it's not on some mountaintop realm. So Dogen says, although the everyday activities of active Buddhas invariably allow Buddhas to practice, active Buddhas allow everyday activities to practice. So again, what does that mean? Dogen offers us these they might seem mysterious, but on some level I feel rich and comforting. What does it mean to allow everyday activities to practice? We could see this in terms of the monastic rules and, you know, allowing the forms of the Zendo or of eating ryoki meals or of the various, you know, forms that are part of the Zen tradition as forms that allow us to practice, and if we take them on fully, even though we can say they're just rituals, well, they are rituals. They're ritual ways of expressing this act of Buddha. But I think when he talks about everyday activities, it's not just the activities in the Zendo. How do we allow washing the dishes or taking out the trash or cooking or gardening to be Buddha, to be active practice? So anyway, I wanted to just open up a little bit of this essay, Gyobutsu Igi, the awesome presence of active Buddhas, and share that with you, because I think it's one of Dogen's richer essays. Of course, there are many others. But I'll stop now and ask if there are any comments or responses or questions. Good.
You know, I wouldn't translate the title the way you did, not right away. Make Gyo into an adjective, an active Buddha. But it's almost certainly in Chinese, this is a verb. It means to practice.
Practice
and Buddha. And the Buddha is an adjective. So I would translate this is to practice the etiquette or the igi, the decorum of a Buddha. That's the baseline meaning. Now, your meaning, does Dogen use Gyobutsu standing alone, like an active Buddha? Right? He does.
He does.
So he's playing with it.
Yes, he is.
He's playing with something.
Okay, absolutely.
So I just wanted to point out that, you know, when I'm translating, I prefer to start with what it actually says and then maybe, you know, go to, like, the metaphorical meaning or the other meaning. So I just want to point that out because it's sort of important. I mean, you know that. It's actually ambiguous, so all translators are faced with the problem. Am I going to bring out the sort of point of this in the title, or am I going to stick with the literal translation? Okay.
Right, I agree.
Okay, that's all. Also, good. I found the quote.
Oh, yeah.
You want to know where it's from?
Yes.
It's Yuanwu Kaching.
Of course.
And it's really long. I don't want anyone, you know, it's a little piece.
Is it part of his Bluecliff Record commentary?
This is the note I have in my translation where I find it in Kenbutsu, seeing the Buddha. The expression dragged through mud, drenched in water, was often used by Chan Master Yuanwu and by his disciple Dawei. It's very common, actually. In many contexts, the expression is employed as a disapproving comment on someone's words, indicating that the speaker is muddled and caught up in deluded thinking. And so it's in Bluecliff Record, actually.
Yeah, right.
And you know, I won't read the whole thing, but it's a little piece of a very long comment by Emmanuel.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is just another example of how much Dogen has at his fingertips.
This thing here, if I were to read it, it contextualizes his use of that. Right. So
yes.
he knows that, and it changes the meaning of what he says when he mentions mud and water.
Okay. So
and where is it?
To the Bluecliff Record. So you guys, you know, go.
That's a big
here.
Record. Griff, they want to know what case. Can you track it down?
Sorry.
But I'll just mention that
case 37.
In case 37 is mentioned in a negative context, as Griff said. But Dogen says, active Buddhas, or Gyobutsus, are free from obstruction as they penetrate the vital path of being splattered by mud and so forth.
Right. There's also Soto commentators say that it's a metaphor for skillful means.
Yeah.
The Buddhas really, or Bodhisattvas, get down in the mud with ordinary living beings.
Sure, it's about the Bodhisattva path, for sure. Yeah. Other questions, comments? Yes.
Hi, I'm Gina. How are you doing?
Hi.
I was just curious, because this is the first time I've read about this, but I do study a lot of Buddhism and Eastern religions. But how, you say that it's active Buddhist, but if you're living in like an everyday, is it still considered ascetic in the mind, the way you would garden, the way you would handle it with your own kids, or because it seems that you're saying that it's active Buddhism, but you're living in like, this everyday activities, does it make it harder for one to separate from attachments because you're more surrounded by it? I don't know if that makes sense.
Okay, I think I heard a question in there.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. So as Griff pointed out, active Buddhism is just one way to translate it, but he's talking about Buddhas practicing I'm obviously, in the spirit of Dogen, I'm playing with this and translating it, in a sense, for our context. So Dogen was teaching to monastics mostly. There were lay people also. But for most of American Zen, practicing in the world with parenting and with working in the world. And, I feel like Dogen, in the spirit, again, of bringing Dogen down to our earth, that a lot of these sayings, yes, are relevant to how to practice with the attachments we have. So to recognize a vital process on an active path is to, in some sense, have some space around all of the attachments that we're involved with, but also the Bodhisattva way is about not being attached to non-attachment. So in some sense, this is more advanced practice, it's more difficult. It's, for those of you, and I know some in the audience have gone to practice in monastic context and ongoing, in some sense, not that it's not very challenging, but in some sense, there is the support of the community and of the monastic containers. But most of American Zen Buddhists are out in the world, with relationships and parenting and jobs and, going to the grocery store and so forth. And I think what Dogen is saying, even though he was speaking to monks, has something important to say to that kind of practice. In the same way that Dogen's Pure Standards for the Zen Community, Ye Shingi, that Shohaku and I translated, is about the practice of monks in the monastery in the everyday, in taking on their various positions like the head chef and the various jobs in the monastery, but the spirit of how to take on everyday activities that is in Ye Shingi, I think, it is relevant in ways that need some unpacking for us. Yes?
I just was interested in having you talk about reading the concept of faith in the Buddhist sense, which I think is different than the Western way of looking at the worry. And I was wondering if you could kind of go into that a little bit for the sake of the audience and of those who have studied your practice.
Well, we have this problem in translating and in just talking about any of this stuff in English, that any religious word has connotations from Abrahamic religions or Christian or Christianity. So I like the suggestion that Will made to use the word clergy or cleric rather than priest or monk for what Zen priests or what Zen for Zen clerics. The same with the word faith. There's a lot of Christian baggage around that, Western religious baggage around that. Faith usually means, in a Western context, or it can come to mean, belief in something. And I think the spirit of faith in Dogen and Zen is more, maybe better to translate as trust or confidence even. It's not faith in something outside. It's not faith in something inside either, exactly. It's this kind of being willingness to take the next breath, to take the next step, to be involved in mistake upon mistake. Yes?
It's just, commenting on that, I think of Shinshin Min. And, it seems to me and this concept of faith, it's more about discarding all these things that we do have faith in that we may not even realize we have faith in, one after the other, one continuing, realizing delusion after delusion,
yes,
and letting them go.
Yeah.
Or something different from the Christian or the Judeo-Christian idea.
Yeah, so Zen is a process of deconstruction. Deconstructing what we think, who we think we are. I mean, basic teaching of anatman, non-self, doesn't mean to get rid of the ego, I would say. Dalai Lama says that too, but it means to see through the ways in which we're caught by this constructed small self that we need to get, you know, to survive adolescence. You know, we all have an ego. How do we not be caught by it? Is more the point of that. So yeah, okay. I may have missed part of your question.
No.
Okay. Stephen.
I agree with you that this is one of the maybe overlooked, relatively overlooked fascicles. And on the translation issue, it sounds like you've been working with this for a while because you did the translation that was in an earlier book, and now you're coming back to it in your monograph here. How do you feel in that process? Did you see it differently 10 years later?
I see that. So I didn't go back and try and retranslate it. I used the translation that Kaz and I had done a while ago. But looking at it again, of course, no translation is perfect. I agree with what Griff was saying. There's various ways to translate this, and this title particularly we translated in a kind of provocative way, intentionally. But the process of translation is, as the Soto Zen Translation Project is doing at Stanford, with voluminous footnotes, you really need to give all the citations and everything. When Shohaku and I translated Dogen's extensive record, we tried to have lots of footnotes because there are lots of references. So in terms of how I, this particular fascicle and looking at it again, I tried to focus on the parts that felt most juicy for me. But there's a whole other section where there's a long playing with, I'll go to the translation, with Xuefeng and Xuanzha, and then Yuanwu's later comment about the Buddhas and the past, present, and future abide in flames and turn the great Dharma wheel. There's a whole section of Yoga Tsuyiki that talks about this image of Buddhas, not just what I talked about before, this transformative function in this vital process, but also the Buddhas sit in flames. And that's, again, another provocative image that we can understand in lots of ways. It's being willing to be in the flames of one's own attachments. There's a line in there that I'll mention that I think is helpful. Xuefeng, a great master, who's the one who turned over the rice in the sand in the story before, said the statement, Buddhists in the past, present, and future abide in flames and turn the great Dharma wheel. His student Xuanzha said, as flames expound Dharma to all Buddhists in the past, present, and future, all Buddhas remain sitting and listen. So this is a point that Dogen also makes in Heikoroku, that it's not that Buddhas are the ones giving the teaching, and then there are the deluded listeners, but that Buddhas also come and listen to the Dharma. So anyway, he turns things around again and again in lots of different ways. Mm. So I'm not sure I responded to your question.
Yeah, no, good. Thank you.
But in terms of what to present in this book, I tried to look at some of the parts of it that seem most provocative and that seem to fit into the theme of questioning and how Zen is about questioning. Other comments or questions, speaking of which, or responses? Yes?
I was also wondering, does this practice also include like traditional Buddhist practices like mantras and mudras, like the hand positions as well? I'm not sure if I'm mixing religions.
No. Well, this is a controversial issue. So is anybody here an official from Sotoshu? Okay, well, Shikan Taza, that could be a whole discussion. What is Shikan Taza? What is Shinjin Datsuraku, which is a phrase that Dogen used, that Stephen mentioned, that Dogen uses much more than Shikan Taza. But just sitting is just sitting. There's nothing else that you need to do, But just in terms of my own teaching and with my Zen students, I'll say that practically speaking, many people need to have some particular object of meditation to help settle. Just sitting is basically objectless meditation, just to be present with whatever comes up. But I do sometimes recommend mantra and sitting with using mantra while you're sitting. And I do it myself. And for any Zen place that chants the Heart Sutra, it ends with a mantra instruction, and the mantra gate, gate, panagate, panasamagate, bodhisattva. So I think it's okay if you're doing zazen, even in the Soto context, to use that mantra if it helps you to settle. To
is
then
that beyond, okay. I just want to make sure I understood what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think whatever helps, practically speaking, including mantra. Well, of course, we do mudra. We do this mudra, we do in meditation this mudra, and walking meditation this mudra. So there's lots of mudras. And, in terms of Soto Zen ritual, and Will has written about this, there is a large part of it that comes from Shingon, esoteric Japanese ritual, or maybe Tendai esoteric ritual. So. But more fundamentally, for Buddhism in America, I don't think we have to get hung up on this way or that way. I think we can be grounded in Dogen's teaching, for example, in Soto Zen, and learn from lots of other traditions that are around. This is a really exciting time for history of Buddhism. It's that, Buddhism is a global religion for the first time. Maybe in the last 10 or 15 years, it used to be an Asian religion, but it's, here it is in Florida. And also all the different forms of Buddhism, Asian representatives of those teaching forms, the branches, from all the different cultures are around, and they're American disciples. And so why not learn from each other?
So you're saying that it is quite flexible.
Well, some teachers are more flexible than others.
Okay.
And maybe sometimes it's being flexible is not helpful.
One more, please. Yes.
Sam.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could briefly talk about any parallels that exist between Shigantaza and Vipassana, or Vipassana, whatever, however it's pronounced. Insight.
Briefly? I think practically speaking, there's a lot of parallels in terms of the actual experience of sitting. Vipassana people like to close their eyes. That's one difference. So they're not as necessarily as focused on posture as in zazen. The difference that, as scholars, we study the differences, and those are important in a certain way, but on another level, the heart is what's important, and it's not so different. But to talk about technically about the different meditation approaches, I could go into that, but that's a whole other talk.
Okay, there'll be more chance for interaction at 4 o'clock, so let's take our short break, and we'll come back with the last speaker. Thank you.